The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Legion of Audience. This is James. And before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and let you all know about the brand new Who Would Win Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get behind the scenes access like you've never seen before, go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Who Would Win patrons will have access to outtake videos, early info on battles, and even get a vote on characters that we'll use in upcoming episodes. So if you'd like to support me and the show, head to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow, and for as little as $5 a month, you can define yourself as more than just a fan. You'll be an official member of the Legion. Hope to see you there.
Another day, another training. As Baki the Grappler continues his journey to surpass his father in strength and skill. Baki is working out today in a graveyard, hopping from crypt rooftop to crypt rooftop and jumping in and out of freshly dug 6-foot holes. Baki hopes a crypt ghoul will drift by and give him a chance to spar today. But it is then that all the lights go out, a dirge bell rings in the distance, and one of the crypt doors opens up. It is from there that the Undertaker steps out to see who it is that has disturbed his sleep. Baki sees the size of the massive opponent in front of him and gets excited for his upcoming workout. But has he bitten off more than he can chew? The dead man will decide that. It's wrestler versus grappler. It's Mean Mark versus Shonen. It's The Undertaker versus Baki the Grappler. Today on Who Would Win?
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gabs, and as always, I'm joined by the one and only Ray Stikanis. Legion of Audience, our faithful fan base, today marks a historic occasion where we bring to you for the first time ever an iconic professional wrestler to the Who Would Win show. In one corner, you have The Undertaker, the legendary WWE figure known for his supernatural presence, dark persona, and unparalleled longevity in pro wrestling. And in the other corner, you have Baki, the insane fighter from manga and anime who is driven by his insatiable desire to surpass his father's incredible power. As usual, I did the patented Who Would Win Google test just to see how many times this matchup has been discussed. And believe it or not, this match has been discussed and even somewhat visualized in the WWE video game. But in terms of a clear-cut, no-nonsense debate to declare the winner, yeah, that's never been done before until today. Ray, I gotta know, what are your thoughts on today's matchup?
I, as usual, I'm excited, but I'm a little perplexed by this. You know, we were in the boardroom this week trying to put this together. Let's keep it real. Showdown September is just around the corner, and we're working on how we want to approach it, what our theme is going to be, what matchups we want to have. Feel free on any of our social media platforms, if there's any matches you want to see, like overly done matches for Showdown September, we're definitely keeping our eyes out because we're planning that right now. Anyway, James walks in and just says it. I want Baki the Grappler. And that got me very excited because I said, I don't know who that is. I don't know what that is. What is a Baki the Grappler? And he goes on to explain, Ray, it's like one of the top five most popular manga series in history. And I go, fantastic. I still call it manga. But apparently it's a big deal. I asked all of my anime friends and they, with no hesitation, were like, that dude's awesome. That dude needs to be on the show. We need to introduce this character. Even though he had his own Netflix show, I feel like the Who Would Win show is the way a lot of people are going to first discover who Baki is. And that's fantastic. And then on the other side, we have The Undertaker. I said, look, if we're going to do this right, I want to do The Undertaker, right? And I know The Undertaker is a real person. I know that he is a professional wrestler. I know something about that myself. And I also understand that on a preseason episode of the Who Would Win show, The Undertaker was used, and I just want to say it right now, one of my least favorite episodes. I felt that the representation was not very good. I felt that the entire conceptualization of that old, nobody cares about it anymore episode was bad. And when I first joined the Who Would Win show, one of the first things I said to one James Gavsey is, let's never let The Undertaker on the show again. So I'd like to say I'm excited to rep The Undertaker on today's show.
Look, Ray, yeah, this is really throwing me because every time we're bringing this up, you know, anywhere in the production meeting, you know, the odd dinner that we have with a team that you're not invited to get you somehow find your way to, we say like, hey, what about a pro wrestler? What about, you know, this real person we put him in and The Undertaker's name? And you're like, no, never. You're just like, you're so adamant about never having, especially The Undertaker on the show. I don't know what changed. I don't know what's going on, but man, I am so excited that there's some personal growth happening with Ray Stikanis on the Who Would Win show. Who would have thought that was possible? Not I. Now, with that being said, when you want to commemorate The Undertaker making really what I call their first real appearance on the show versus Baki the Grappler, if you know, then you know, if you know what I'm talking about, you need that type of judge who can absolutely come in and just bring down the absolute best logical decision of all time. And we have that very judge for today's episode, making another appearance on the Who Would Win show. It's the star of the My Three Dads podcast, co-host of the Father Good podcast. It's writer, producer, fan favorite, judge. And despite what Ray Stikanis says, is someone I know is the most intelligent and best looking person in all of entertainment. It's Marshall Givens. Marshall, welcome back to Who Would Win.
Thank you. Thank you. That's so kind of you, Ray. I hate you. You're horrible.
What is happening on this show right now? I would never besmirch the good lookingness of Marshall Givens. If you asked me to my face, I would have to admit he is a good looking man.
I have to be the voice of my mom and my wife. So you just have to deal with it.
They hate me too.
I mean, I'm just saying, if you know, you I mean, oh, looks, man, how it goes. That's how it goes.
I mean, it's not surprising. There's a long list of people that fall in that category, Ray. All right, listen, Marshall, before we get into, I'm just saying what everyone's thinking. Marshall, before we get into today's episode, tell Legion of Audience, our fan base, what you've been up to.
I have been writing and teaching and stand-up teaching and teaching stand-up and doing stand-up and writing and teaching improv and starting up a new comedy school with a new theater called the Hollywood Independent Theater.
Wow.
I've been just starting up some classes there, trying to get the school going as the education director. So that's new.
I wish I had teachers and professors and instructors as smart, as intelligent. And again, despite what Ray Stikanis says, as good looking as you are. You are the total. I'm just saying I wish I had you as an instructor for anything, really. Would have been a lot more fun. And how do people get in contact with you to be able to take advantage of classes and the offerings you have?
Well, you can check out thehitcomedy.com. Our website just went live, The Hit Comedy, as well as check us out on the socials at The Hit. Yeah, The Hit or The Hit Comedy, depending on your social media of choice. But just look us up. You'll find us. Or you can just look me up at Mr. Happy Givens on IG or Twitter, and I will get you there.
I love it. By the way, I also have to throw in a quick plug. You know, we used Marshall, listen, the fans love you on the show. Ray Stikanis also equally loves another judge named Stefan Thomas. He's one of the two founders of the Creative Extreme Comic Book Company. And I'm happy to say we provided a trailer for our newest superhero live action short that we did with some of the fine people who did Extraction, The Continental, some of the John Wick stuff, Mortal Kombat. The action's insane. If you want to check out the trailer for what's called Alpha Initiative Zero, go to www.thecreativeextreme.com. Check it out. Watch it. Be amazed by it. And yeah, it's a superhero short that was made by fans for the fans. I'll leave it at that. All right. With all that being said, let's get to today's episode. Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
I cannot believe you brought up Stefan Thomas. There's a name I haven't heard in a very long time. He hasn't been on the show in like 5 years, and I think that's a wonderful thing. Anyway.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
Representing the WWE, the wrestler who demanded his own locker room, not because he was a diva. It was just so that he could dress in peace. Ortiz, The Undertaker, and representing manga slash anime by way of Netflix, the man who might have grappled with many other men, but has he grappled with his sense of purpose as we all spin around on a dying planet year after year, waiting for a tomorrow that is never promised and less often fulfilled? Has he ever grappled with that, Baki the Grappler?
I just don't feel those are the same level of intros executed the same. They're both good, by the way. Well done, Ray. All right, now look, before we go any further, let's go over the basics about who would win match. Now, each debater will make 3 points. Keep in mind that the who would win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with no prior knowledge or prep time allowed. And the debater has to stay within the confines of the character. And when it comes to determining the winner, it's the judge who has the final say and will determine which character lost based on death, incapacitation, or battlefield removal with no outside interference being allowed. Remember, you can always check out all of our rules on our website at www.whowouldwinshow.tv. And before we get started, don't forget to visit the official Who Would Win store. Visit sayword.co/collections. That's sayword.co/collections. And click on the Who Would Win merch section to get your hands on some great Who Would Win shirts, hats, hoodies, and our very own proprietary 3D printed Who Would Win versus stand. And now, let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our combatants. Ray, please give us the details for The Undertaker.
The Undertaker is a professional wrestler with a long and storied career. His real name is Mark Calloway, and Taker was a staple of pro wrestling for over 3 decades. Now, he debuted in the ring in 1987, while his comic book counterpart had his run with Chaos Comics in 1999. That is the version that I will be representing today. That was the problem with the old episode. They tried to keep it to a real human in the real world with real laws of physics. My Undertaker comes from the pages of Undertaker Chaos Comics, and I have read every single issue of it to prepare for this, and I am ready. Now, going from creepy mortician to a biker to the Lord of Darkness, the Undertaker's never been afraid to take that character in a new, different, and quite frankly, badass way. Billed as being 6'10" and able to walk on the top rope, Undertaker was a whole different type of athletic talent that nobody had ever seen before. Taker won many world titles and is quite frankly one of the greatest pro wrestlers to have ever lived. His comic book counterpart is locked in a three-way struggle to amass 3 books of the dead to eventually become the ruler of the hell dimension known as Stygian. That's what I'm going to say. Fun fact, the Undertaker is known for having no fear, but did you know that there is one thing that he fears in all of life? It was revealed by his family that he has a deep aversion to cucumbers. Yes, that delightful veggie is the bane of Undertaker's existence, and this is because as a kid, he ate too many of them, got sick and puked, and decided I will never again have a cucumber. I think you should consider giving them another try, but once you've committed to the bit, there's no reason to change now. Anyway, that is The Undertaker.
2 things I got to say right away, Race to Canis. Number one, as if any type of vegetable, never mind a cucumber, has ever passed your lips and been something you consume. Number two.
Pizza's a vegetable, sir, according to some school boards.
In Detroit, for sure. Toppings are very questionable. And secondly, now I get it. You had never had any intention. This is the ultimate swerve. This is why you never said the comic book version of The Undertaker in any of the production meetings.
Oh no. Did I forget?
Race to Canis.
Oh, man. What a bummer for you.
It is a bummer, but here's the thing. You have no idea who Baki the Grappler is, so I still like my chances. All right. Here are the important details for Baki, not the pro wrestling version, but the actual anime version that you can watch on Netflix. Now, Baki Hanma, the protagonist of the anime manga series Baki the Grappler, he's a martial artist prodigy with an unrelenting drive to surpass his father, a character named Yujiro Hanma, who is known as the strongest creature on Earth. Not strongest man, strongest creature. Baki's journey is fueled by desire to become the greatest fighter in the world, leading him to face off against a wide array of opponents in brutal and intense battles. His character is defined by his remarkable resilience, strategic combat skills, and the inner conflict of balancing his monstrous strength with the desire for personal connections. Now, Baki made his first appearance in 1991 in the manga Baki the Grappler, which was created by Kaisuke Itagaki, and the series has since expanded to multiple anime adaptations, with Baki's character evolving through each iteration showcasing his growth from a determined young fighter to a formidable martial artist capable of taking on the most powerful opponents in the world. And here's an interesting fact about Baki. Did you know that the most recent Baki anime series inspired a very unique type of live action show with what I believe is the best name for a show of all time? It's true. I'm talking about, Ray, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the universally loved television series everybody knows, Notes of a Girl Who Kept Thinking Baki the Grappler is BL. I mean, it's everyone's favorite. Ray, I've lost track of how many times you and I have been in deep discussions about the BL grappler. I have no idea what it is. Evidently, in 2019, a sociologist named Junko Kaneda wrote a book about Baki in which she recontextualized the manly fighting manga as a BL, where BL stands for Boys Love Story, which is actually kind of translated again into a story that typically straight men would want to read. That's what she said. It's a thing, whatever. Surprisingly, this book managed to spawn a live action series in 2021, when I guess Netflix was just greenlighting everything. Rather than follow Kaneda, however, Notes of a Girl Who Kept Thinking Baki the Grappler is BL follows a woman who works at a stationery company who secretly become obsessed with the manga in her free time, having a very unhealthy infatuation with the character she reads about. If I had a dollar for every time, you know, I saw that show, it's just crazy. Who says there isn't anything original on TV anymore? And now you have the facts on both opponents. Marshall, I have no idea what that show was. I'm not going to watch it. Do you have any questions before we get started?
I just want to make sure that I'm clear. We're talking about Baki the Grappler, not Baki Bartokomus from Perfect Strangers. That's not what we're talking about.
I wanted to use characters who, you know, his powers didn't, like, you know, outstrip Thanos and, you know, would just be like too much of a one-sided victory for them. So I'm like, let's just go to like who's claimed to be like the strongest character in their world, Baki the Grappler.
I got you. Okay, cool. So Meepos has nothing to do with it. No cousin Larry Appleton. None of that.
No.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Then I got no questions. I'm ready to dive into this.
All right. Let's see what's going to happen with this. Who knows? Ray, please proceed with your point number one.
I would say again, I read every single, and there were about 10 plus bonus issues of the Undertaker comic where there's a three-way battle for the powers of hell involving books, and it was wonderful. Every single frame could be a 1980s heavy metal cover. It was delightful. I highly recommend. Go seek it out. You can read them online on somewhere websites, and you can go find. Anyway, let's talk about the crazy strength and fighting ability of the Undertaker, because the thing we know about him, he's 6'10". He's 300 pounds of wall-walking athlete. One of the most nimble big men, if not the most nimble big man in all of history. And in the comic books, they ramp up his strength beyond what a human being could do, even with show effects around him. He was bound by chains when he was originally taken in as a slave by this character called the Embalmer, who knew who he was. He knew that, like, he was destined to, like, fight against him, and he kept him subjugated for like a very long period of time. Well, he decided one day he'd had enough, the Undertaker did, shattered those chains, even though he had been malnourished and working in the sun for a very long time, and he just started whooping everybody there. I saw him in a fight in the middle of the street, reach over, rip the hood off of a car, and then just start wailing on a soul-eating demon with the hood of a car he had freshly torn from a vehicle. Two bikers in a bar jumped at the Undertaker, jumped like physically at him. He grabbed both by the neck, and then while holding both up in the air at the same time, cracked both of their necks. That means he's just as strong with his left hand as he is his right hand, and he's ridiculous. Now, the Embalmer is like a 16th century druid. This comic is wonderful. He's a 16th century druid who found himself a pathway to hell, where he went and just started killing like demons and stuff and having a good time. And then he had that's where he got to mess up with the books and make everything happen. But he's a very powerful magic user who can hop through the different dimensions. Anyway, the Embalmer had the Undertaker in a half Nelson at one point. And Undertaker just reached down and flipped the dude over his head, sending him flying. A very powerful, the most powerful character outside of the Undertaker in this world. He treated him like a rag doll. I saw him grab a boulder because the Embalmer was going to forcibly wed the half-sister, I believe, of the Undertaker that he did not know about. This comic is wonderful. And Undertaker was going to spoil it. So he grabs a boulder that was about 3 to 4 feet big, huge, and then shatters up through the floor of the ceremony where it's taking place in order to make things happen and call it off. And so he just bursts from the floor. I cannot express enough how much people need to go check this out. Anyway, he fights people in the ring as a pro wrestler. That's his job. But he can see that they're actually demons. You know, like They Live, where you wear the glasses, you see the aliens. Undertaker naturally can see that they're representing as human, but they're actually demons from Stygian, and they're fighting to try to beat him to take his soul. Well, he fights these demons very roughly. Lots of blood, lots of fire. It's crazy. I seen him punch a hole through one of them. Like, again, it was Gandhi 2 in UHF. I saw him grab the upper and lower jaw of a demon and rip it till his jaw became unhinged, killing that demon. A demon was trying to run away from him, obviously, at one point, and tried to jump through a portal. And he grabbed the demon by the tail and said, "You ain't going anywhere. I'm the dead man. I'ma get you." And he rips the tail off of the demon, sending him hurtling through the portal in a lot of pain. The whole point here is he sees demons. He fights demons. They do not belong in the mortal world. He sends them packing back to Stygian. And that's part of his unholy crusade as the Eternal Warrior known as The Undertaker. And that's my point number one.
Real quick, did you find this comic book series to be wonderful?
I loved it. Again, it was very much what I consider to be what is a problem in anime, generally speaking, is that all the characters spend the entire episode telling you who they are, who everyone else is in relation to them, what's happening at this moment, and then what they're going to do in a future moment. And they spend the whole episode making sure we're all on the same page. And then, like, one move is made on a chessboard, and we go to the next episode, where we do it all over again. The Undertaker comic does this every single issue. They want you to absolutely understand every ounce of what's happening over and over and over again, and then, like, one punch is thrown, and then we're done. It's great. It's the best.
I was simply looking for a yes or no answer, Race to King.
I don't know where Chaos Comics is right now, but they deserve a raise. Or to exist again.
Did they actually make the Ultimate Warrior series as well?
They may have, James. They may have. We might see him on a future episode.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's see how this one goes first. Okay. So a few things. You know, the Undertaker was bound by chains for quite some time. That's interesting because good luck trying to bound Baki to anything. He's an escape artist just because with all the martial arts training, no one's going to lock him up at all ever because he'll get out very easily any way he wants from anything. You know, Undertaker ripped off the hood off a car. Then grabbed two bikers, you know, either hand, ripped their neck, blah, blah, blah. Picked up a boulder, 3 to 4 feet, all that kind of good stuff. Yeah, you're describing a very similar strength to Baki when Baki was 13. So I'm very happy that the Undertaker from the comic book has this superior strength that equals what Baki did at 13. Luckily, he's 17, 18 right now, and we'll see what happens with that. Now, let me get into my point number one, and let's just get into this. Let's talk about how Baki is really just a physical monster. You know, the physical abilities of Baki are, he's the ultimate martial arts prodigy, but again, he's also like the ultimate physical specimen. Imagine being in a world where your goal is to surpass the strongest creature on the planet, your dad, no less. So, you know, Baki's got to bring some serious heat. Now, in terms of speed, Baki is lightning fast. We're talking about a guy who can dodge bullets and move faster than the human eye can track. One time someone shot a bullet at him and he outran the bullet. How you do that? I don't know. He had to see the bullet and then just outran it. Real fun thing that he can do, you know. Baki's speed really is on a whole other level. I would definitely call it superhuman because that's at least what it looks like he's doing on screen. In terms of durability, if you think his speed's impressive, wait until you hear about this. This guy has taken hits that would put most people in the hospital for months, and he just gets back up like it's no big deal. Remember, he fought this character named Pickle, which is interesting because The Undertaker has a weakness to cucumbers. Well, where do you get cucumbers from? You know, cucumbers turn into pickles. This is just common sense and logic here, Race to Canis. And he fought Pickle. Now, Pickle was a prehistoric giant who killed a Tyrannosaurus because he wanted to eat it. And somehow they revive this person present times. And Baki gets slammed, tossed around, crushed by Pickle. But he keeps coming back for more, then discovers a new way of fighting that he adds to his repertoire while fighting him, and then beats him. It's like his body literally refuses to quit no matter how much punishment it takes. Of course, he's not just physically gifted. He's also insanely intelligent. It's not just about the brute strength and speed. He is a literal genius when it comes to fighting. His ability to, like, I don't know, analyze opponents, adapt mid-fight is what really sets him apart. During his battle, this is a great one, with a character named Muhammad Ali Jr., which is based off the son of, it's true, they went there. Muhammad Ali Jr., by the way, great fighter, just as good as his dad, Muhammad Ali. They spell it differently, of course. but is actually way faster and more physically gifted than his dad was. So during this battle, Baki just quickly figures out how to counter Ali Jr.'s fast punches by adjusting his rhythm, turning the fight in his favor. It's not just about brawn. Baki's brain is always working at full speed when it comes to fighting. Now, in terms of just pure power, this is crazy. His punch is no joke. He can shatter bones, send opponents flying with a single punch. One of the most jaw-dropping displays, this was cool. He took on a fighter called Biscuit Oliva, who is this just giant, massive mound of muscle. He's at least 350 pounds, probably at least 6'1". More on him later. And this guy is just known for his power. He can take out almost anybody. And Baki's like, you know what? Let me just figure out how to hit this guy with equal power. He was outweighed by at least a factor of 2, possibly 3 to 1. And he figured out how to hit just as hard as this character who's known for punching somewhat amongst the hardest punchers in the world. By the way, Baki can punch the ground so hard, it causes an earthquake-like effect in the general vicinity. That's pretty insane. His strength, this is where he really shines. He's lifted and thrown opponents twice his size like they're nothing. In a fight against his dad, again, the most powerful creature on Earth, Baki shows off his insane grip strength by crushing a stone floor with his bare hands. How you crush a whole floor with your bare hand, I don't even know how it works. It's just this superhuman strength that's not even human. His reflexes are so sharp. He can react to attacks pretty much before they happen. He can read his opponents like, you know, they're a book. He knows how to see them and kind of do what's about to happen and get away from without being hit, and how to hit them before they've even thrown that first technique. He just responds that fast. His flexibility is insane. You know, what's great about Baki is that it's not just his like muscles and his tendons and everything that's flexible. In certain ways to escape submission holds, like a half Nelson, whatever, he gets put into him, and then he twists his inside places, internal organs. He's worked on his flexibility and stretched his internal organs so that he can move his body in literally what looks like impossible ways to snake out of stuff. He can escape anything. See, that's what Baki is. He's a powerhouse of speed, durability. He's got that fighting IQ, that ingenious intelligence, power, strength, reflexes, flexibility. He's the ultimate martial artist. He's always pushing his limits and then coming up for even more and just going and going and going. Look, this is something Undertaker might have some experience fighting some superhuman opponents, but nothing with a fighting ability plus that superpower of Baki. That's my point number one.
Are you kidding me right now? The Undertaker has fought the greatest pro wrestler. He's fought Hulk Hogan, James. You fight Hulk Hogan, that argument becomes moot.
The Hulkster cannot twist, and he's not. Listen, I know the Hulkster can do split and get Hulkicized and be impervious to pain, but I don't think he's letting his internal organs get Hulkicized and twist in weird places. Yeah. Sorry,
tell
go ahead,
me you
Ray.
Don't know anything about Hulk Hogan without telling me you don't know anything about Hulk Hogan. Now, Baki the Grappler, at the age of 13, you said, was he picking people up, breaking their necks, and murdering them in redneck bars? Was Baki murdering people, James?
Yes, except they were way worse.
I have a hard time believing it. I want some examples of that. What I will say right here is that what you've described, Baki, he sounds great, actually. It sounds like a very fun character. I like the journey of it. In his own universe, he's not even the strongest character. His father's the strongest character. And then Pickle has defeated Baki before with greater strength than what Baki has. And if you lose to a Pickle, you're definitely losing to the Cucumber.
I mean, Pickle Rick's no joke, is all I'm trying to say about that.
Well, you don't mess with Pickle Rick ever.
That's right. Okay, listen, let's see what the judge has to say. Marshall Givens, you've heard one point from Ray and myself so far. Where's your head at so far with this battle?
Well, one guy is super strong and can crush the floors and things. And the other guy's fought demons. And I don't really know a whole lot about these demons, but I feel like supernatural strength is above natural strength. So right now, I'm looking towards comic book accurate Undertaker. Just because there's a supernatural element, this demon fighting thing, it's going to be hard to... I need to see or hear some other feats of some other abilities, some other opponents, you know what I mean? Because right now, it's feeling very Saitama-ish. So I need to see what other opponents Baki's got.
Interesting point. All right, let's see if I have something up my sleeve. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Ooh. Stay tuned for point number two. And we're back. Ray, go ahead and do what you do. Hit us with your point number two.
Point number two, we're going to talk about some of the durability, because I haven't seen a comic this bloody since any Deadpool or Punisher, quite honestly. And those, we're talking about the max issues, not the normal ones. Because every single scene, people are just bleeding profusely everywhere. Like, there's fire everywhere. There's blood everywhere. I felt really at home reading this comic. Or should I say, 13-year-old Ray would have thought this was the greatest thing he'd ever seen in his entire life. Older Ray agrees. Now let's talk about durability, because I watched The Undertaker get thrown out the side of an office building 100 feet up in the air, roughly 10 stories, landed flat on his back on the street, and was able to get up and walk away. I saw him chokeslammed by a monstrous demon called the Soul Eater that essentially got dropped off by the embalmer in the middle of New York City and was told just start murdering people. So he just started grabbing people and like taking out their souls with like soul draining power in his hands, and was leaving them as lifeless husks, increasing his own power, taking on the entire NYPD. Well, the ones that weren't running away. I'm just kidding, of course. Anyway, he got choke slammed by the Soul Eater through a car, not on top of a car, through the entirety of a car, and was able to get up and keep fighting. He had a werewolf, Undertaker did, in his crew. And the werewolf double-crossed him, could you believe it? And gave him two about as deep slashes, creating a magical go-board on his chest with heavy slashes, and Undertaker was able to keep on going. The point is, what makes the Undertaker great, both in wrestling and in the comics, he can take any amount of damage, and at some point, he's just going to sit up. You know what I'm talking about. He's just going to sit up, be at full power, and keep on going. He also fights smart in the comics. He knew that the Soul Eater was physically stronger than he was, and all the souls he was taking was making him physically stronger and stronger. So he said, I can't overcome him with sheer force alone. What did he do? He played possum. He let the Soul Eater think he had knocked him out. The Soul Eater went to go take his soul, but the Undertaker has no soul, and so it corrupted the Soul Eater, melting him and sending him back to Stygian, where he belongs. Look, I saw the Undertaker grab a demon and used it to tank Hellfire, like the newest Deadpool movie. He just picked him up and tanked the embalmer's Hellfire that he was throwing at him, and then he threw the demon at the embalmer, knocking him asunder. This Hellfire, when done to a regular person, melted his face like he was at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then later on, the Undertaker took a gout of Hellfire to his body at roughly like 5-foot range and got engulfed by the embalmer's Hellfire and was able to keep on going. And my favorite durability moment, he was fighting in a graveyard, a place where he has massive amounts of extra power because of the source material around him. The embalmer picked up, I think it was the embalmer, he picked up one of these stone gravestones, right? That was in the shape of a cross, threw it, and impaled the Undertaker to the ground by impaling him with a giant stone epitaph. And that kept the Undertaker down, I'll admit it, for like a minute, until the Undertaker pulled himself off of it and just kept on going. What is Baki the Grappler going to do to stop a guy who can get impaled by a stone gravestone and then keep on fighting a minute later? You got to put him down for 2 minutes. You ever see the Undertaker go down for 2 minutes? I think not. And that's my point number two.
I mean, in real life, he has. Like, there's a couple of events where he has been over 2 minutes. All right, listen, here's what you've told me about the Undertaker from this comic book. He bleeds, he can be damaged, he can be impaled. And that's okay, great. I mean, that's a thing. I know he can be knocked down. I know he can be incapacitated for way more than the 2 minutes necessary to actually win a fight in a Who Would Win battle. And that's the thing. You're dealing with someone who's such a martial arts prodigy. He's going to read your durability. He's going to see what you're doing. He's going to see what you're made of and be like, got it. I got to tie this guy down, or I got to separate his head from his shoulders or rip his arms off. Baki is someone who will do all of that and a whole lot more. Baki's got this great smile that hides this insane rage and, you know, demonic desire to do violence to people just because, you know, he wants to prove himself. That's what you do as a kid. You want to make sure your dad's proud of you, and sometimes you'll beat up your dad if that's what you do. Anyway, it's a weird series. Okay, all I'm trying to say is the Undertaker can be defeated, can take on punishment, and can be incapacitated for well more than 2 minutes, and that's something Baki can do. Now, let me get to what Baki's training is like for my point number two. And my point number two I want to talk about is martial arts abilities. So let's just jump into it. In the martial arts world of Baki, he's practically a walking encyclopedia of combat techniques, past and present. He isn't just a fighter, by the way. He's a martial arts and fighting prodigy. He's got this mind that can adapt to literally any situation. His body is trained to be the ultimate weapon, and his mind is what pulls the trigger of that weapon. Now, in terms of his training, his journey in martial arts began when he was just a little kid. I think it was age 3, to be exact. And by the time he was 13, he was already diving deep into crazy amounts of training. And at 13, which I'll mention later, he's taking out way more than human opponents who have crazy durability, crazy superhuman strength, and killing them and doing bad things to them just because that's what he does. Look, his training is as intense as it's going to get. Again, he's aiming to surpass his father, who is the strongest creature on the earth. This is really weird. Now, in terms of something that our esteemed judge, Marshall Gibbons, said, there is a supernatural element to this show that people don't often kind of take into consideration. Now, with Baki and just like his dad, what they can do to overcome other people's opponents, other people's techniques, their power, is they can channel their inner energy, their ki. It's a Japanese cartoon, so it's going to be ki as opposed to chi, which is a Chinese term. Just putting that out there, race to Canis. So he can channel his ki and do some crazy things with it. He can observe someone using their own ki to create some different powers for themselves, fake their death, increase their strength, make them faster, make them look like they're there, create multiple, whatever it is. And Baki will see it and go like, got it. I know what you're doing. And he'll do the same thing, channeling his ki to not only duplicate, but then to outperform it. See, he'll see a technique. He'll see you use it once. And he's like, I figured it out. By the way, that your technique is now mine and I'm going to improve upon it during the 3 seconds that we've been fighting so far. This guy is absolutely insane. One of his most iconic training methods, this is crazy, talking about visualization, he's able to visualize his opponent so vividly when he's thinking about, you know, most people think about shadow boxing or shadow kickboxing, like, okay, let me picture how my opponent might try to kick me or whatever. So when Baki does that, he visualizes so intensely, his ki energy literally makes his visualizations come to life. So literally, if he was thinking of taking on this opponent named Iron Mike, you know, kind of mimic Mike Tyson, and this person comes kind of to life with this visualization, with this white outline, and then he starts fighting Iron Mike. Iron Mike's throwing punches at him and actually hits Baki, and Baki starts to bleed. How do you create a visualization of a character when you're shadow boxing that comes to life and now can actually help you train because they hit you and hurt you? He did the same thing because he's thinking, I got to take on my dad, strongest creature on earth. Okay, who can move that fast? Who has superhuman strength and humanoid? So he thought of a praying mantis and made a praying mantis a little bit bigger, like an Andre the Giant-sized praying mantis. It's faster, stronger, can take more durable, the whole thing. But he's visualized a praying mantis coming at him, fighting him, that also knew how to fight and use martial arts. This is what he does. This is something he's going to do. Look, his martial arts abilities are off the charts. He's a master. Like, saying he's a master of multiple disciplines doesn't even cover it. He's a master of pretty much everything. Every type of fighting style you can think of, he's got. And if he doesn't know it and he sees you do it, he figures it out and then implements it into his own styles right away. He's all about adaptability, unpredictability. He doesn't stick to one style. Instead, he just moves the way he needs to. He feels what's going on with the fight and he takes it there. Now, look, all I'm trying to say is The Undertaker is a great fighter, great combatant, especially in comic book form. I'm sure of it. But this is something he's facing that's a little bit different. He's facing someone who's got that supernatural key energy, who can adapt to any type of opponent he's taking on. Superhuman, not a problem. If he doesn't have enough strength, he focuses his ki to kind of just come out with that super strength the way he needs it. And that's the difference here. He's going to fight The Undertaker. He'll be like, maybe I'm short. I'm coming up short in different areas. I'm going to see The Undertaker. Oh, God, The Undertaker can do that. He's channeling his energy to do stuff. Got it. I'll do the same things. In a weird way, I'd say Baki's almost like a fighting chameleon, except he's not, because chameleons don't become better than what they're trying to mimic. That's what Baki does in a fight. He takes on new fighting techniques, puts them into his already crazy fighting style, and overcomes and is that much better. That's why he's kind of undefeated in the later series, and that's my point number two.
I mean, look, you talk about Baki's ki, but I'll be real with you, James. Baki's ki is looking a little flat. You think he's going to see Undertaker dropping magic-based attacks, and then he's just suddenly going to be like, oh, I now understand the powers of Stygian magic and the underworld. I'm just going to hit him with hellfire. No, that's not what's going to happen now or ever. And Baki doesn't fight magical opponents. I would love to hear about it. It seems like he's just fighting very good fighters from his world, not giant soul-eating demons from another plane of reality. These are two different things. And you talked about binding Undertaker. You talk about beheading him. You don't think the embalmer tried to do all of that? And he's a 16th century druid with intense magical ability and an army of demons. And he couldn't do it. What does one pretty strong guy gonna do that Undertaker hasn't seen before? This is a guy who's been in the ring with Yokozuna, okay? And the demons, Marshall, to answer your question, the demons are very strong, they're very durable, they're great fighters as well. They come to Earth and basically mimic and become pro wrestlers in our eyes. So they all look like physical specimens doing off-the-wall crazy acrobatics, but in reality, they're these demons, but we can't really see what they are.
Interesting points. All right, listen, let's see what the judge has to say. We are at the turning point where, after hearing 2 points from both Ray and myself, Marshall, you've got to tell us, who is ahead in this battle, and what does the other side have to do to pull out the victory?
Well, that last round was pretty good, because the argument for Undertaker's durability is pretty strong. It's pretty strong. But the argument for Baki's fighting style and fighting ability is also just as strong to me. Right now, it's pretty close. I would say Undertaker by like a little bit right now. I think I don't know, Baki's durability, Baki's feats, just to see if there is something that can, I don't know, compare to what Undertaker has taken in terms of a beating, something like that. Maybe, I don't know. I want to hear what this is going to be, because right now I could go either way, to be honest.
It's kind of like a ketchup chip or a muskrat casserole type of situation.
You know what? If that's part of this decision, then Undertaker loses every time.
Wow.
You gotta
be a Patreon member to understand what the heck we're talking about.
And all even right, then, you won't hear about it for like a month.
Probably. That's a thing. All right. This battle is heating up. Stay tuned for point number 3. And we're back. All right, it's now or never. Ray, hit us with your point number 3.
Point number 3, we haven't even talked about the magical ability of the Undertaker. We've just talked about all the blood and guts and violence and ripping tails off and durability feats. But he carries with him, the third book. There's a trilogy of books. So in the story of the Undertaker, there are 3 books that the embalmer, when he went down to Stygian, and he was able to release them and flush them to the 4 corners of the earth, and then change the time period that we're all in. It's crazy. Don't worry about it. Anyway, the 3 books went to the embalmer, kept one. Undertaker was able to grab one. And the 3rd one, for whatever reason, went to Paul Bearer. Went to the Undertaker's manager, but they're enemies, right? Okay, great. And so mastery of each of these books ups the Undertaker's game. It ups his level. It gives him access to magical abilities, right? So that he also, not only is the Undertaker great on his own, he also has access to the entire Ministry of Darkness. And that would be the APA, the Acolyte Protection Agency. Remember, the Acolytes, that's where it came from. Got access to Midian, former Phineas I. Godwin. Now Midian of Viscera. Big Boss Man is part of this team as well. The whole team is just made of magic. And Kane, of course, is there as well, but they're sort of half-brother enemies. The point I'm trying to make is, he also commands a squad of demons. Undertaker can just call a squad of demons whenever he wants to help him fight. He only saves that for the big ones, though. Now, he has many magical powers, and because by the end, spoiler alert, of the final episode, he gets all 3 books, ladies and gentlemen, and just as quickly they're taken away. But for a decent chunk of it, he has 2 of the books because Paul Bearer gives him one of the books instead of just being torn to pieces. It's fine. Don't worry about it. They sort of work together even though they hate each other. But the Undertaker can shoot bolts of lightning from his hands. The Undertaker can basically do kind of a slasher portation trick wherever there are shadows present. He can just appear from shadows. There's demonic possession and taking over someone's brain and getting them, willing them to do what you want in these comics. Another fun thing besides the Hellfire, which I did not find an example of Undertaker shooting Hellfire. That's what the Embalmer does. But in the final issue, Embalmer's like, I've whacked you with this Hellfire before and hurt you. I'm gonna do it again. Undertaker uses the power of the 2 books to create a purple mist of powerful energy around him that overpowers the Hellfire that was shot at him and makes the Embalmer look basically right at the camera and go, uh-oh. That's a bad sign. When you're a 16th century druid who wants to be the lord of the afterlife and hell, and you're looking at the camera going, uh-oh, yikes, because you know you're about to get your butt handed to you. He could also, near as I could tell, create a portal to hell and earth, because you see him fighting in a wrestling ring, and then suddenly he's fighting the same people, but as demons in Stygian. So basically, he's able to take the fight from the ring, put it in hell where there's still a ring, and the turnbuckles have demon heads and want to eat the wrestlers. This comic is the best comic I've ever read in my entire life. And finally, the embalmer in the final issue is able to power himself up. I think he has, I don't even know, it's like Merlin's talisman or something. It gets crazy with the ancient artifacts. But the Undertaker calls upon something called the Crimson Death, which is in like an all systems go kind of a moment, to up his power to match the heightened power of the embalmer, eventually defeating him, making him go really weird at the end and very upset at his own situation. And the Undertaker takes him out. And so when you've defeated characters like the embalmer, like the soul-eating demon, there's other ones as well. Solvex was his name. He's phenomenal. And once you defeated hordes of demons at the same time and become WWE champion simultaneously, I'm sorry, Baki's doing great. He can't even beat his own dad. Undertaker burned his to death in a house. That's my point number three.
All right, well, you know, here's the thing, Ray, I kind of applaud your tactics of using that kind of interesting version of The Undertaker, and the comic book series sounds great. While you're doing that, I had to email a friend who was really into the, you know, any type of comic book associated with wrestling, and he sent me some information that's really, really interesting. So check this out. The Undertaker, evidently within this comic book series, has been beaten physically, not with magic, but just physically beaten down in the comic book series, by quite a few people, some that you may be familiar with, some that you may not be. He's been beaten by someone named the Unknown Warrior, where he just got physically beat just in a fight. The Unknown Warrior, I wonder if that was the Ultimate Warrior, just no one knew about it, making him unknown. Mankind beat him in a physical confrontation in the comic book. Let's see, and Kane overpowered and beat him as well. A character named the Golem, just a giant creature, beat him physically, literally beat him down, took him out. Giant Gargoyle, called the Giant Gargoyle, crushed The Undertaker, literally crushed him and left him defeated there for quite some time. The Executioner, one of my favorite mask wrestlers, evidently appeared in comic book form and beat The Undertaker physically in a fight. And here's a fun one. The Betrayer, kind of like a Race to Canis character. The Betrayer uses, I quote, physical strength and martial arts, that combination, to beat The Undertaker in a fight in the comic book series. I wonder if there's anyone who I'm representing who uses, I don't know, that physical strength and martial arts prowess to beat these powers. Oh, that's right. I am. Let me get to my point number three. And for my point number three, let's talk about the big wins and the big feats for Baki. Really just the big wins. And again, The Undertaker, all joking aside, in any form is a powerful, very dangerous opponent. Not going to lie. But he doesn't measure up, especially after that list of losses The Undertaker had in his own comic book series, mind you, to these people. Baki's getting the win. Now, for example, Baki at 13 fought a superpowered giant Sasquatch gorilla creature called Yasha Zaru, and Yasha Zaru was so powerful that he killed a grizzly bear by punching it once, kind of whatever. He got hit in the head by an axe thrown by the Andre the Giant character who lives in this Baki universe because they have, you know, pro wrestlers and everything else, and he got hit in the head with that axe. It didn't flinch. The axe just hit the ground, and Baki won a brutal fight against him at 13. He did it with his agility, his intelligence, and he outmaneuvered Yasha Zaru. Eventually, he landed that decisive blow, took down the giant beast, and this, of course, just boosted Baki's confidence, because at 13, doing something like that, yeah, you're going to feel pretty good about yourself. Now, another really cool fight, I mentioned this character before, Baki versus Biscuit Oliva. His nickname is Unchained, and this is a really interesting character. He's a mountain of muscle, literally, one of the strongest men alive, like top three, I believe, in the world. Fun fact, he set up a lavish billionaire status-style penthouse home for himself in the world's most dangerous prison, where he makes the rules and has no prison, you know, has the prison actually pay for this penthouse that he has there. He's allowed to leave and go and goes on government missions to help out. It's a weird thing. This is a powerful person. Baki faces off against him. It's a battle of pure power versus speed and skill. And then Baki realizes how to use more power to overcome one of the most powerful beings in all of the world. And he does. This is crazy. He fought Muhammad Ali Jr. Already mentioned that as well. And again, this is more of a cool thing. Muhammad Ali Jr. was thought to overtake everyone. He's a better version of his father in all these different ways. and Baki took him out and actually crushed him psychologically so bad that Muhammad Ali Jr. never came back, at least yet within the series, to fight at that same level ever again. Now, I mentioned he fought that character Pickle. Pickle, let me just paint this picture for a second. Pickle is a giant Conan the Barbarian-looking prehistoric dude, was killing a Tyrannosaurus in order to eat it, and then somehow got preserved, woke him up. He's now living in the present, and he's eating Tyrannosaurus meat because that's what he does. Pickle gets revived, and then martial arts master after martial arts master, the best in the world, come and challenge him to a fight because why not? Now, these masters are the best in the world, and Pickle beats them one after another and eats a piece of them, literally eats up their arm or their from their knee down their leg because, you know, now that he beat them, he looks at them like food. This is a demented storyline that I just couldn't get enough of. So anyway, Pickle fights Baki, and Pickle clearly shows he's way above superhuman in terms of physical, fighting ability, durability, power, everything. He's off the charts. He literally is something that's more powerful than Tyrannosaurus. And Baki uses that visualization technique to actually project it onto Pickle. And Pickle thinks he's fighting this dinosaur hybrid, projecting himself as a giant beast with the jaws of that T-Rex, the talons of pterodactyl, the horns of triceratops. To make things even better, Pickle is freaked out. He's like, what the hell is this? And cowers in the corner. And then Baki starts biting him so fast that Pickle can't even see where he's moving. He's literally like, oh, I now know how to move so fast. It's almost like I'm teleporting. At the end of the fight, he's like, okay, I'm overpowering Pickle. It's like I'm beating a defenseless animal. And he's like, I don't want to do something. So he just says, okay, fine, I'm done. And he's like, Pickle, come at me now. Go ahead, punch me, do all this kind of stuff. He gets the win and is like, Pickle, I don't want you to feel too bad about yourself. Hit me, whatever, to kind of whatever. It was the weirdest fight. Baki got the win and is like, you know what? Just go ahead, hit me, whatever, at the end. Again, it's a weird series. Now, what the best fight of the whole series was, and it was a culmination of the last series of the last episode, Baki versus his dad, who's nicknamed the Ogre. Again, it's the ultimate showdown. What's the right word? This is the culmination of Baki's entire journey. He goes toe-to-toe with literally the strongest creature on Earth, his dad. He's so strong that the combined militaries of Earth have to go to him and ask permission to do things around the world because they don't want to get him upset or get on the wrong side of this guy. Anyway, during this fight, the Ogre's pulling out weird techniques, using that key, that magical power he's got, turning Baki inside out, smashing around, doing everything, trying to kill him because he says, you're either going to die or you're going to overcome. He smashes him back, leaves Baki on the ground. After a long fight, Baki still survived. And finally, his dad's like, you know what? I may be the world's strongest. That's my official title. I think we should share that. Now we're both the world's strongest, which is an insane win for Baki. In the end, Baki has the exact tools that have overcome the Undertaker in the comic book form: physical power, physical strength, martial arts ability, and the ability to adapt and kind of do whatever he needs to do. The Undertaker's great. He's never fought against someone like Baki and gotten a win. That's my point number three.
I would disagree with this entirely. He's fought plenty of... Every single demon sounds like Baki to me, I'll be honest with you. And he's fighting their leaders imbued with magical hellfire flames. And I do want to say, James, unlike your friend, I've actually read the Undertaker comics, and very little of what you said actually happened. Now, I will say I am talking specifically about the Chaos Comics 1999 to January of 2000 run of the Undertaker, which went like 12 issues. There have been other appearances of Undertaker in comics that exist in other different storylines and other canonical versions of the character. Heck, there was a WWE comic where he just appeared as a wrestler that has nothing to do with what I'm speaking now. So please, argue the version of the character that I'm talking about. Yes, Mankind Mick Foley does exist in this comic. He's like a Deadpool character who's the only human who can see the demons because his mind is so fractured, and he ends up getting Mr. Sacco and getting involved in the graveyard confrontation. This is the best comic I've ever read in my entire life. And I have to be clear on this too. The Stygian realm, it's Hell's prison realm. This is where they put the people in hell that are so rough, they have to be institutionalized in a prison. That's what the Undertaker is in charge of there. Great. And James, we used a lot of words there to just tell me at the end, yes, he got beat by Pickle. I don't know what more to take from it than that. He lost the fight, and you told me why it's okay he lost the fight, but he lost the fight. You know who doesn't lose fights? The Undertaker, because he'll be banished to hell to be tortured for infinity if he loses the fight, and he will not.
I mean, it's so cool. He's so, like, he was undefeated for every WrestleMania that he appeared in. Okay.
We all get old, James. Well, I don't. Marshall Givens does not.
I do not.
Honestly, Marshall Gibbons looks younger than when I first met him, so this is why. I don't know what's happening. It's crazy.
Listen, Marshall, you know, there's lots of ways to admire who you are and what you become, but, you know, you've heard 3 points, both Ray and myself. It's time for you to make a decision, but before we get to what Marshall has to say, let's celebrate the Who Would Win Patron of the Week. Every week, we choose one of our amazing members from the Who Would Win Show's Patreon community and put them in a battle. Ray, which patron do we have today?
Today, we have a new patron. We're getting new patrons all the time, James. It's a very exciting time. We're posting a lot of videos. We got a lot of polls. We just completed a poll that we're going to see who the next character is going to be. You know, we do that once a month and we go from there. But today we have a new one, Sams0909. Sams, you're here on the show. Congratulations.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. Sam sounds like a very, very powerful person to have on the Patreon kind of, you know, thing we're doing right now, as do all of our Patreon members. All right, you know what? Let's have Sams go against one of the strongest and most durable humans in all of animation. Yeah, you guessed it. Let's have Sams fight Fred Flintstone.
Fred Flintstone. This is crazy because Sams, I didn't say this before, he's from the UK. He is a British gentleman, which means that being from the UK, he obviously is imbued with the powerful fighting spirit of Monty Python. So he absolutely is going to be attacking with the fish slapping dance. He's going to be starting an argument from absolutely nothing that only goes around in circles. Fred Flintstone is going to be out back behind his rock house smoking a Winston cigarette like he does. Check your YouTubes, kids. And Fred Flintstone is going to start getting winded right away because of all the general silliness happening around him. He's going to start talking. Sam is going to start talking like one of the Gumbies. I'll be slapping you. And he's just going to start slapping him left and right and center. And then they're going to start getting involved in some of the movies. And he's going to hit him with Mr. Creosote from The Meaning of Life. But ultimately, Fred Flintstone has no answer for the giant foot that will come from the sky that will squash him and his cigarette pack into oblivion. Sams 0909, you get this win for your home country. And you, my good sir, should be proud.
Wow, Monty Python, you know, imbued fighting prowess for Sams. I mean, this just makes complete sense.
A tiger.
Congratulations.
In Africa.
Spam, spam, bacon, and spam. Yep.
You know, I was disappointed with the Monty Python series of movies because I didn't really see any pythons being used in any of their hijinks. Well done, Sams. Remember, you two can be...
They were so violent on that TV show. It shouldn't have been Monty Python's flying circus. It should have been Monty Python's dying circus.
Hey-o.
That's the level of pain they were bringing.
Yes.
It was about as tasteful as the amount of taste you could have in muskrat casserole.
Don't you even.
Oh, boy.
Said it. Remember, you two can become a celebrated patron of the week. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow and sign up, and you may be featured in an upcoming episode of Who Would Win. All right, Marshall, look, it's time for your decision. Take us through your process. Tell us a story, if you will, and reveal who you think wins this battle between The Undertaker and Baki the Grappler.
So I gotta say, again, I was very familiar with The Undertaker, being a fan of 1990s wrestling myself, that being the last time I really paid attention to it. So in my eyes, The Undertaker is undefeated and Paul Bearer is a magician. That being said, the idea of that comic book lasting less than a year, because I counted the months, I got that. Undertaker being a supernatural being, I mean, that's a huge deal. Fighting off demons, being chokeslammed through cars, chokeslamming demons, things like that. Having magical powers a la Doctor Strange, only with bigger muscles. It's like Thor played Doctor Strange. That'd be weird. But then
Baki is back as Baki.
Baki.
When he comes back in the Baki series, which came back not once but twice, where he played Baki.
So Baki, not Balki, but yep. Baki. I mean, look, martial arts prodigies got a lot of feats of strength, obviously, defeating or at least fighting to a stalemate with the strongest creature on earth, his father, is a big deal. So to me, I mean, it was actually really close only because the magical abilities of the Undertaker would seem to give an edge in the fights, considering Baki doesn't have any magical abilities other than the ki. Other than ki, and I don't want to discount the ability power of the ki. So to me, I think the deciding factor is the rules of the fight, which is incapacitate or totally destroy. And it seems like neither one of these guys would be totally destroyed by either one of them. So to me, I feel like it's an issue about being incapacitated on the field of battle. And I didn't hear anything about Baki the Grappler being incapacitated in any of his fights, even fighting to father to a stalemate. It was a stalemate. Whereas I feel like the Undertaker has at least been incapacitated in some way, even if he does come back with his magic and everything like that. And the other thing that I think is important is the Undertaker seems to fight down to his opponents. He fights down. He doesn't use his full power all the time. He fights down, and then that's why he gets incapacitated. So I think I'm going to have to go within this one by a hair with Baki the Grappler for that very reason. So I think I'm going to go with Baki the Grappler, James and Baki the Grappler.
There you have it. This is unbelievable. There was only one way I think Baki could have gotten this win, and it's exactly the way Marshall Givens laid it out. Baki has been incapacitated after the fights only, where he feels the wear and tear after he's won, and he's like, cool, I'm going to let my body heal. You absolutely nailed it. Great job. Great decision. Race to Canis. I got to tell you, I admire your underhanded tactics with the Undertaker bringing the comic book version. Who would have saw that coming? Absolutely brilliant. And yet you fell a little bit short. That's okay. It's all good. You did a great job with it nonetheless. I got the win. I'm insanely happy. All right, Race to Canis. Tell Legion of Audience how you feel right now.
I'm massively disappointed in one Marshall Givens. I often feel I don't get a fair shake when Marshall's on the show. I feel like I have shown you an example of a character who tanked literal hellfire, and I'm being told a hammerlock is taking down the Undertaker. I gave you an example of the Undertaker being put in a half Nelson from a 16th century demonic druid and just easily flipping him over his head, launching him across the room. I didn't even bring up the fact that he still does the tombstone finisher to the demons, flattening their skulls. I don't know that that would have actually helped me here because of the way Baki... No, because Baki can rearrange his brain. I didn't think it was necessarily... Based on what I know Baki can do, I didn't think that was the best approach. Don't you lie to me, Marshall Givens, even if I want you to. I think I gave plenty of examples, and yes, there are times the Undertaker is constricted. There are a lot of times in the comics that the Undertaker is constricted, whether it be by giant trees or tentacle monsters or various other demonic abilities. I think those are demonically powerful characters that have the strength to do it, whereas Baki would not have the strength to do it, even though, as James pointed out, the very impressive feat that he is not the most powerful person on his planet still, even at the end of where we are right now. Wait, that doesn't help his case at all. Marshall, I think you got this one dead wrong.
Hey, you told me that the Undertaker got chokeslammed through a car.
And he got up and he beat that man.
I don't know.
Look, I love the Undertaker, but when you have, it's like NFL Super Pro. Interesting concept, some might say, but when you have a comic book series that lasts, I don't know, 12 issues or less, we're not even around for a year. There's something about, I don't know, you got to almost discount the character somewhat, Race to Canis.
Disagree.
It's like suggesting watching a superhero movie made from characters that are Russian in origin and calling it absolutely fantastic when you're recovering from the COVID shot and realize it's a horrible movie.
I got the win with NFL Super Pro on this show. I got the win with the Russian Guardians from 2BTV's The Guardians, Russia's answer to the Avengers, on this show. And as far as I'm concerned, I got the win with the Undertaker on this show. I'll let the people tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, except you didn't get the win. Marshall Givens, you were fantastic. Again, you bring the je ne sais quoi. Sorry for speaking French. The je ne sais quoi to this amazing show and just make it so much better. Please come back and bring your magic back to the show at any time you want to. Maybe next week, maybe the week after, who knows? Until then, please tell the Legion of Audience, our fan base, where they can find you.
You can find me at Mr. Happy Givens on your socials, Instagram, and Twitter. Yeah, that's where you find me.
Fantastic. Race to Canis. An interesting battle today. Again, with some great tactics on your part. You fell barely short of a win, but still did pretty well with all of this. Tell the Legion of Audience or fan base where they can find you online.
I would like to believe that this energy of this episode will land this one on some people's like top five all-time who would win show episode lists. I hope that that's the case. I hope people will check it out even though there's a manga character in it. gosh willing. But most of all, I hope that the people go to the social medias. That would be the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the Threadses of the world. That's all I can think of as far as social media goes. And I want you to let your voice heard. Not only hashtag Ray was robbed, hashtag Undertaker was robbed. Let's bring WWE's main fan base in for this episode so we can get every wrestling fan on the planet to tell Marshall Givens he got this one wrong. You can find me on Threads at Almighty Ray 316, and I have a feeling people are going to have something to say about this one.
They very well may. All right, you can find me on X, aka Twitter, Racing Games, favorite social media platform, Instagram, and Facebook by typing in at James Gavsy. Remember to join the official Hoodwin Facebook group. That's insanely growing, by the way. It's still going strong. Make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and to be part of that community. You can also find us on Instagram, Threads, TikTok at Who Would Win Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you go for your podcasts. On behalf of myself, Ray Sakinas, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win production team, thank you once again for checking out another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.
Sup, everyone. Brian here, host of the TV and Movie Trivia Podcast. It's a trivia-style podcast focusing on TV and movies. Listen in for questions like, what's the name of Michael Scott's screenplay? What do you say to view the Marauder's map? What are Tony Stark's last words to Thanos in Avengers Endgame? And where does Ron Burgundy say he is when he calls the news station sobbing from a phone booth? I've covered The Office, Harry Potter, Marvel, Will Ferrell movies, Lord of the Rings, and more, with even more on the way. So play along to the TV and Movie Trivia Podcast anywhere you get podcasts, and stay tuned for more trivia.
Hey gang, I hope you enjoyed this episode and loved listening to the show as much as we enjoyed making it. Quick reminder that you can support us by going to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Okay, gotta prepare for next week's episode. Hope the rest of your day is full of wins.